This episode of the OrthoBullets podcast will go over the topic of TKA instability from the recon section on orthobullets.com. TKA instability is a common cause of early failure following total knee arthroplasty and accounts for 10 to 20% of revisions. Types of TKA instability include extension or varus valgus instability, flexion or anteroposterior instability, midflexion instability, genu recurvatum, or global multiply-operated instability. As far as the presentation of TKA instability, it's important to obtain a history from the patient about previous operations, indication for the initial replacement, original implant information, comorbidities including connective tissue disease, inflammatory diseases, diabetes or Charcot arthropathy, as well as a history of trauma. Patients may present with symptoms of pain, instability, or both. It's important to obtain the timeline as to the start of the symptoms, as well as what worsens/improves the pain in these patients. Physical examination should include assessment of the overall gait, as well as observation for a valgus/varus thrust. Ligamentous examination should be conducted throughout the range of motion in an attempt to reproduce symptoms. You should perform the flexion instability test in which there is a positive posterior sag with the knee flexed to 90 degrees. You should assess overall strength, extensor mechanism competency, as well as patellar tracking. As far as imaging, recommended views on radiographs include a weight-bearing AP, which is used to assess joint line symmetry, a full-length AP, which is used to assess overall mechanical alignment, as well as a lateral, which is used to assess tibial slope, tibial subluxation, and or recurvatum. Findings may include extension instability, which is usually secondary to excessive distal femoral resection or an oversized femoral component. Other findings may include flexion instability, which may be from over-resection of the posterior femoral condyles, an undersized femoral component, or an increased tibial slope. You may also find mid-flexion instability, secondary to anterior or proximal placement of the femoral component. And finally, another finding may be genu recurvatum. Other imaging to obtain includes computed tomography, or CT, which can offer information regarding component rotation. Studies to obtain include serum labs like CBC, ESR, and CRP, as you must rule out infection as a potential cause of TKA instability, and the knee should also be aspirated to rule out infection via cell count and culture. Now, let's go into the different types of TKA instability in a bit more detail. We'll start with extension or varus valgus instability. Varus valgus instability has two types, symmetrical and asymmetrical. Symmetrical is caused by excessive distal femoral resection, causing a flexion-extension gap mismatch. Asymmetrical extension instability is more common. Ligamentous asymmetry is caused by failure to correct the deformity in the coronal plane. Treatment of symmetrical instability is distal femoral augments to tighten the extension gap, and keep in mind that upsizing the poly will fail as it affects both the flexion and extension gaps. Treatment of asymmetrical instability include balancing the ligaments accordingly, specifically controlled release of the soft tissue on the contracted side, and if ligamentously insufficient, a varus valgus constrained device may be needed. Asymmetrical instability caused by an intraoperative MCL transection/deficiency should be treated with suture repair or suture anchor reattachment of the MCL, use of either a cruciate retaining or a posterior stabilized implant, as well as a hinged knee brace for 6 weeks postoperatively. Asymmetric instability from an intraoperative MCL transection/deficiency can also be treated with the use of an unlinked constrained prosthesis. Moving on to flexion instability or anteroposterior instability, this occurs when the flexion gap exceeds the extension gap. It can manifest as a knee dislocation where posterior stabilized knees can, quote, jump the post, resulting in dislocation. Treatment of flexion instability secondary to over-resection of posterior femoral condyles is with posterior augments. Treatment of flexion instability secondary to undersizing of femoral component should be upsizing the femoral component. Treatment of flexion instability from excessive tibial slope should be to decrease the slope and consider a posterior stabilized prosthesis. Treatment of flexion instability secondary to excessive posterior femoral condyle cuts is to augment the posterior condyles of the distal femur. And finally, flexion instability secondary to posterior cruciate ligament insufficiency following a cruciate retaining arthroplasty is to convert to a posterior stabilized prosthesis. So again, over-resection of posterior femoral condyles should be treated with posterior augments. Undersizing the femoral component should be treated with upsizing the femoral component. Excessive tibial slope should be treated with decreasing the slope and considering a posterior stabilized prosthesis. Excessive posterior femoral condyle cuts should be treated by augmenting the posterior condyles of the distal femur. And finally, posterior cruciate ligament insufficiency following a cruciate retaining arthroplasty should be treated by converting to a posterior stabilized prosthesis. Moving on to mid-flexion instability, this is a controversial and poorly understood topic. However, it's associated with modification of the joint line and involves malrotation when the knee is flexed between 45 and 90 degrees. Potential contributing factors include femoral component design in the sagittal plane, attenuation of the anterior MCL, as well as overall geometry of the tibiofemoral joint. As far as treatment of midflexion instability, typically full revision is required, and the goals are to restore the joint line as well as equalize flexion and extension gaps. Moving on to genu recurvatum, this is defined as a fixed valgus deformity and iliotibial band contracture. As far as causes, genu recurvatum is associated with poliomyelitis, rheumatoid arthritis, or Charcot arthropathy. In the setting of poliomyelitis, the patient walks with the knee locked in hyperextension, as well as the ankle in equinus due to quadriceps weakness. Treatment of genu recurvatum is typically a long-stemmed posterior stabilized or varus/valgus constrained implant. Keep in mind that a rotating hinge is reserved as a salvage procedure as residual hyperextension may occur, leading to early failure. Finally, as far as a global multiply-operated instability, this is defined as laxity of both flexion and extension gaps as well as varus/valgus instability, and this can also be associated with severe bone loss. Patients with global multiply-operated instability present with multidirectional ligamentous instability with a recurvatum gait. Treatment of a global multiply-operated instability include a varus-valgus constrained prosthesis at minimum. Typically, treatment will include a hinge prosthesis with or without augments, sleeves, and/or cones. Severe bone loss situations may require endoprosthetic replacements. Okay, so now that we've gone over the major points about this topic, let's go over a few questions to apply the information and get a sense of how this topic has been tested on past exams. The first question reads, a 68-year-old woman reports pain and sensations of instability following a primary total knee arthroplasty 18 months ago. A preoperative radiograph shows a severe valgus knee from lateral compartment osteoarthritis. A postoperative AP and patellar view radiographs show a completely dislocated patella, evidence of coronal instability on her AP radiograph, and an internally rotated femoral and tibial components. A CT scan shows that the femoral component is internally rotated 8 degrees and the tibial component is internally rotated 4 degrees. Management should include which of the following? And the choices are 1. A structured physical therapy program. 2. A custom patellar stabilizing brace. 3. Modular polyethylene liner exchange to a thicker liner. 4. Revision of the femoral and tibial components. And 5. An open lateral retinacular release. The correct answer to this question is 4, revision of the femoral and tibial components. So the patient had a valgus knee preoperatively, and in these patients, care must be taken to avoid internal rotation of the femoral component that can lead to patellar instability. At the present time, she has a completely dislocated patella, evidence of coronal instability on her AP radiograph, and internally rotated femoral and tibial components. Therefore, management should consist of revision of both of her components to place them in appropriate external rotation. Moving on to the next question. A 66-year-old female presents with knee instability going downstairs 18 months after a posterior cruciate retaining total knee arthroplasty. She reports having recurrent effusions. Radiographs show that the tibia is subluxated posteriorly relative to the femur. What is the most likely cause for her instability? And the choices are 1. Intraoperative rupture of the patellar tendon. 2. Alteration of the joint line. 3. Posterior cruciate insufficiency. 4. Anterior cruciate insufficiency. And 5. Catastrophic component loosening. The correct answer to this question is 3. Posterior cruciate insufficiency. So patients with posterior instability following total knee arthroplasty typically present with a sense of instability, recurrent knee effusions, anterior knee pain, and posterior instability with a positive posterior drawer or a posterior sag sign. The radiographs of the patient in the question stem demonstrate a tibia that is subluxated posteriorly relative to the femur. The other choices would present differently on radiographs. Pagnano et al. Report on 25 painful primary posterior cruciate ligament retaining total knee arthroplasties that were revised for flexion instability. They suggest that flexion instability can be a cause of persistent pain and functional impairment after posterior cruciate ligament retaining total knee arthroplasty. In the setting of flexion instability, revision to a posterior stabilized knee design along with meticulous ligament balancing seems to give reliable results. Weslevsky et al. Performed a level 4 study of 13 patients with posterior instability following PCL retaining total knee arthroplasty. They concluded that revision to a posterior stabilized component leads to improved outcomes in patients with flexion instability. To quickly go over the incorrect answers, answer 1, intraoperative rupture of the patellar tendon is incorrect, as patellar tendon rupture would result in loss of active knee extension. Answer 2, alteration of the joint line is incorrect, as elevation of the joint line occurs with excessive distal femoral resection and consequent upsizing of the polyethylene insert. Answer 4, anterior cruciate insufficiency is incorrect, as the anterior cruciate ligament is sacrificed in almost all of the total knee arthroplasty systems today. More so, the lateral knee radiograph described posterior subluxation of the tibia on the femur. This is more likely to be caused by PCL insufficiency. And answer 5, catastrophic component loosening is incorrect, as there is no evidence of component loosening or fracture in this patient. Moving on to the next question. A lateral radiograph obtained following a posterior stabilized total knee arthroplasty shows dislocation of the knee in a posterior stabilized total knee arthroplasty, and the femoral component is translated anterior to the central tibial post. This complication could be best explained by which of the following? And the choices are 1, too little posterior tibial slope, 2, posterior translation of the femoral component, 3, inadvertent injury to the popliteus while cutting the posterolateral femoral condyle, 4, overly recessing the posterior cruciate ligament, and 5, elevation of the joint line. The correct answer to this question is 3, inadvertent injury to the popliteus while cutting the posterolateral femoral condyle. So dislocation of the knee in the posterior stabilized total knee arthroplasty occurs when the cam on the femoral component is translated anterior to the central tibial post. Excessive flexion laxity is the most common etiology of this complication. The posterior cruciate ligament is a stabilizer in flexion and is generally removed as part of the technique. The popliteus is also a stabilizer in flexion and should be protected. Inadvertent injury to the popliteus can lead to an imbalance and flexion laxity. Other surgical factors that lead to greater flexion laxity include undersizing the femoral component, anterior translation of the femoral component, and additional posterior tibial slope. Changes in the location of the joint line have an effect on both extension and flexion stability. Moving on to the next question. An AP radiograph of a patient with diabetes mellitus who has knee pain is highly suspicious for a neuropathic joint, otherwise known as Charcot's joint. There's evidence of bone loss on both the tibial and femoral sides. A semi-constrained knee prosthesis was used in this patient to prevent which of the following complications? And the choices are 1, infection, 2, instability, 3, stiffness, 4, bone loss, and 5, malalignment. The correct answer to this question is 2, instability. So the radiograph described in the question stem is highly suspicious for a neuropathic joint or a Charcot's joint. There is evidence of bone loss on both the tibial and femoral sides, which may necessitate the use of metal and or bone augments. Patients with a neuropathic joint often have excellent range of motion, and postoperative stiffness is not a problem. The main problem with these patients is instability that occurs secondary to ligamentous laxity. Use of a semi-constrained prosthesis prevents the latter complication. And moving on to the final question, a patient who underwent a total knee revision with a posterior stabilized mobile bearing prosthesis now has recurrent knee dislocations. The radiograph reveals a posterior stabilized knee revision and the femoral component has dislocated over the tibial polyethylene cam/post. What is the most likely cause? And the choices are 1, loose extension gap, 2, loose flexion gap, 3, malrotation of the tibial component, 4, malrotation of the femoral component, and 5, poor prosthetic design. The correct answer to this question is 2, loose flexion gap. So the patient has a posterior stabilized total knee revision and the femoral component has dislocated over the tibial polyethylene cam/post. This usually indicates a loose flexion gap or quote flexion instability. A loose flexion gap can occur due to undersizing of the femoral component, anteriorization of the femoral component, excessive distal augmentation of the distal femur, or collateral ligament insufficiency, especially if combined with posterior capsular insufficiency. Isolated laxity of the extension gap with a well-balanced flexion gap causes varus/valgus instability, but it rarely causes the femoral component to, quote, jump the tibial cam of a posterior stabilized tibial insert. Malrotation of the components may cause patellar instability or a rotational instability of the tibiofemoral joint, but should not cause a frank posterior dislocation of the tibia unless combined with other errors of balancing. Although a mobile bearing total knee arthroplasty may be more sensitive to errors in balancing than a fixed bearing total knee arthroplasty, this complication does not reflect a faulty prosthetic design. That's all for this review about TKA instability. Hopefully that was helpful. This is the OrthoBullets podcast, a daily audio review session by OrthoBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for orthopedic surgery education. Keep in mind that these podcasts are designed to go along with the topics on orthobullets.com, and in fact, you can listen to these episodes right on the OrthoBullets website while going through the topic. If you've gotten any value from the OrthoBullets podcast so far, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating and writing us a review on Apple Podcasts. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Thanks so much, and we'll see you all tomorrow.